Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who brings extraordinary intelligence as well as experience and, well, plain old-fashioned courage to the topics that we address here each day is a man I'm privileged to call a friend as well as a mentor. He is retired United States four-star Navy Admiral James Ace Lyons, a veteran of some 42 years of service, including in the Navy, the Naval Academy, and the Merchant Marine, as both a seaman and as an officer, a man who has served, among other things, as the Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet. These days, it gives me great pride to say, he is the chairman of the Center for Security Policy's Military Committee, and very active in the public policy debate with columns at the Washington Times and appearances on various news outlets, and of course, from time to time with us here. Admiral Lyons, welcome back, sir. Glad to have you aboard.
Nice to be with you, Frank, and your listeners.
Thank you, sir. I'm very keen to talk with you about your reaction to what came about today in The Hague, where an international tribunal of the Law of the Sea Treaty handed down a ruling and the Chinese response there, too. What did you make of it?
Well, the ruling is exactly correct. There never was any legal basis for the Chinese claim to almost the entire South China Sea and their recovery of over 3,200 shoals and reefs and made them into man-made islands. And my reaction here is, what should we be doing? Well, I think we should step back a second and we have to develop an overall strategy that includes our regional partners and allies on how where we move forward from here. And in that strategy, we need to incorporate how we demilitarize those man-made islands, how we make Chinese illegal declaration of air defense identification zones and make them null and void. We need to beef up the capabilities of our allies, the Philippines, and I consider Taiwan an ally, and Japan, Korea, so forth, in how we raise the level of deterrence to the point where the Chinese see if they go trying to military enforce these illegal claims, they will see they will be thoroughly defeated.
Do you, there's so much there to talk about, Admiral Lyons. Let me just pull this apart. In the first instance, the Chinese have rejected this ruling in favor of the Philippines by this international tribunal, the Law of the Sea Treaty. Do you anticipate that in so doing, the Chinese are now prepared to double down on these islands and on militarizing them and on declaring an air defense identification zone over much of the South China Sea? In other words, are we likely to see them ratchet this thing up dramatically in the wake of this ruling?
Well, that's certainly one option that the Chinese can take, particularly if we are benign in our response. They will view it as an invitation to continue their illegal expansion and bullying tactics to grab more of these rocks and shoals in this critically, strategically important piece of water, international water, that houses that permits over $5 trillion worth of goods being transited each and every year. And, you know, let me say something on this Law of the Sea Tribunal. While we were very impressed that the tribunal had the courage to make the correct ruling here, it also reinforces our position in not joining the Law of the Sea Treaty, where we would be nothing more than one vote out of 44, and we actually, in effect, turn over our sovereignty to an international tribunal where we have no veto power and have ourselves to any actions that could be brought against us, be they illegal or illegal, which makes absolutely no sense to me.
Hey, Admiral, one of the things you've done also, I just want to commend you for, is you've contributed to a new book out of the Center for Security Policy we call Warning Order, China Prepares for Conflict, and Why We Must Do the Same. And in that book, Ace, we've talked about basically the Chinese buildup, some of which you've mentioned here with respect to these islands in particular, but just very quickly, the kinds of forces that they've now begun to marshal and bring to bear seem to have, according to you, one particularly troubling characteristic. Tell us what that might be.
Well, what they've done, they've militarized these islands. They have created over 3,200 acres of land from these rocks and shoals. On four of the islands, they have built four runways of almost 10,000 feet in length, and which can accommodate somewhere between 23-25 aircraft. They have further militarized these islands by putting in sophisticated surface to air defense missile systems. And I would expect they were also planning to put in certain short-range ballistic missile systems or cruise missile systems. All of this certainly doesn't contribute to stability in these recognized international waters is a cornerstone of the United States policy of freedom of navigation and innocent passage. All of these declarations by China are meant to interfere with that core policy and intimidate our friends and allies in the region to submit to these Chinese bullying tactics and objectives.
One of the other things that you've written about that compounds that problem, that includes longer and longer range ballistic missiles capable of attacking our aircraft carriers underway, and submarines and advanced stealth aircraft and so on, I think you've pointed out, are all, it seems, designed to neutralize the United States Navy.
Let's face it. They built the Navy to confront the United States Navy. When you build an anti-ship ballistic missile, there's only one Navy in the world it's targeted against. Fortunately, we do have a capability that has been residing in the Defense Missile Defense Agency for the past 15 years, and which provides a unique and innovative software technology to be able to effectively intercept not only these anti-ship ballistic missiles, but intercontinental ballistic missiles as well, including maneuvering warheads, hypervelocity, and so forth. And why this has not been brought forth to me is mind-boggling.
Leslie, and I just have to leave it at this, Ace, there is talk that the president is going to reduce our deterrent to this sort of aggressiveness by the Chinese even further by declaring a no-first-use policy with respect to our nuclear forces. Is that advisable based on your experience, sir?
No, you always want to leave the enemy confused and and about what your actual intentions will be. To declare, you've taken away a key element of deterrence by making such a declaration.
Admiral, we have to leave it at that. Thank you, sir, for what you've done for our country and continue to do. Next up, we'll be speaking with Jim Hansen. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, I'm Tim McGraw. The men and women of the Air Force Reserve play a vital role in protecting us at home and abroad. They are your neighbors, whose dedication to our country and commitment to their communities call them to serve. Dedication, commitment, and service. It happens every day at home and around the world. They're your neighbors, making a difference.
Joel Klein catches a 7 o'clock train after his evening CPR class at the American Red Cross.
Ron Garrity's on the same train. He's had a rough day and doesn't feel like himself. Until he feels the sudden tightness in his chest, Ron never thought he'd actually have a heart attack.
Until Joel is administering CPR, he never thought he'd actually save a life.
When you train with the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, I'm pleased to say, joined by the Executive Vice President of the Center for Security Policy, Jim Hansen. You see him these days with great regularity, I'm pleased to say, at Fox News, and you can find his writings at the Center for Security Policy and a number of other outlets. He is, of course, a former Special operator in the United States Army, a Green Beret, and one of the guys who I've relied on for a long time for common sense and a boots-on-the-ground perspective in the challenges that we're facing. Jim Henson, welcome. It's good to have you as always.
Frank, it's a pleasure.
You've been working with our team, Jim, on exposing what is going on with respect to various forces, shall we say, enemies foreign as well as domestic. And I wanted to ask you about this outfit, the New Black Panthers Party. Who are these guys, and what are they up to, and who are they making common cause with?
Well, here's the problem, Frank. I'm about as big a free speech advocate as anybody you're going to find, Frank. But there is a difference between free speech and incitement to violence. And, you know, the Supreme Court has ruled on this, and it's a pretty solid line. You have to be telling someone to commit violence. And I believe the group you talked about, the New Black Panther Party, has crossed that line and now has become a domestic terrorist group. They have been actively calling for death to policemen, inciting their members, posting information that in all ways, shapes, and forms more resembles ISIS than any legitimate civil rights organization. And I think it's time for our government to go ahead and take a solid look at them, you know, and turn some of the security organs of our system toward a group that now bears at least some responsibility for the killings in Dallas. This guy, Micah X. Johnson, was a member of a New Black Panther Party organization for a while and was influenced by their rhetoric.
We talked with J. Christian Adams about this yesterday, Jim, and he was reminding us of the sordid history of these guys, going back, among other things, to their efforts to engage in voter intimidation in 2008 and really the blind eye that first the Holder Justice Department and now the Lynch Justice Department, of course, all of it under President Obama, has turned towards this outfit. So far from having the security organs, as you put it, diverting their attention to these guys, it's been diverted away from them. Is it your expectation, Jim, that we're likely to see them, if unaddressed properly, that they'll engage in still more of this kind of violence? Is there any doubt in your mind, at least, that that's their intention?
None. No, I mean, they have been calling for revolution. They have been calling for violence. They've called for a separate black state. So there is nothing in this group's DNA that should lead anyone to believe they're going to do other than they have, which is incite, cause, foment, and create violence, terrorism, and if they get their way, revolution and a racial war in the United States. I think it's time to shut them down, and any security agency that can take a look at them should be empowered to do so. I think we will probably have to wait for a new administration for that to happen, unfortunately.
Jim, you've alluded to this, but be a little bit more explicit in terms of the relationship that we understand has been a building between outfits like this and Black Lives Matter and the Occupy sort of anarchists with elements of the Muslim Brotherhood in this country.
Well, Frank, we posted a extremely disturbing video at the counterjihad.com site of a member of the Muslim American Society telling the members of that group's national convention, and this is a large group, this was late last year in Chicago, and she's a black Muslim convert, she was telling them to make common cause with Black Lives Matter because Muslims are the new black people, and both of these groups are oppressed. And she actively and openly called for revolution in America, just like they had overseas, alluding to the Arab Spring, where the Muslim Brotherhood and associated groups were overthrowing tyrants and trying to install their Sharia-compliant governmental systems over there. So she wants to overthrow the government. She's black. She said, make common cause with the black nationalist groups, and let's have a revolution here, and Allah will give us victory.
She went so far as to say, we are the new black people, to her Muslim audience. Very worrying stuff indeed, Jim. Let me ask you about some other worrying developments. Specifically, there's the phenomenon, speaking of the Islamists and the role that they're playing inside our country at the moment, of suppression of freedom of speech. It's been, of course, one of their longstanding objectives. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation has been beavering away at this for 10 years, as you know. What happened recently to one of our videos at the Center for Security Policy, seemingly in furtherance of this agenda?
Frank, we produced an educational video about Sharia law and civilization jihad and the organizations that are attempting to spread that around the world, but more specifically here in the United States. It's an animated video. It's actually pretty cool. I would tell people to go to Counter Jihad, watch that video, and learn something. It was designed to teach common people without a deep abiding knowledge of things what is actually going on. And YouTube censored it and pulled it down based, we're pretty sure, on complaints from some of the usual Islamist group suspects, CARE and the rest of them. And for the reason that they called it hate speech. And I defy anyone to find any hate or anything other than factual, educational information in this. Maybe painful truths, but last time I checked, that's not something that should even be, in the stupid category of hate speech. So the nice thing was the public created a groundswell, complained en masse to YouTube, and they did in the end put our video back up, which I think is a triumph.
But it is a reminder of a worrying pattern here that there is increasingly, it seems, censorship along these lines of trying to prevent things that give offense, particularly to the easily offended Islamists among us, to prevent that from being seen by others. We'll be bird-dogging this, as I know will you, and congratulations, by the way. I think you're absolutely right. It's a terrific video, and you were on point in putting it together. I commend you for that. Listen, quickly, Jim, one of the things that we've also been trying to bird dog is what's going on Capitol Hill at the moment. There were, of course, hearings 2 weeks ago, I guess now, with some of our colleagues in the counter-jihad, making clear the phenomenon of willful blindness is really putting us all at risk. What is happening, speaking of willful blindness, with respect to the various pieces of legislation that could conceivably make things worse?
Well, President Obama has been using a program he calls Countering Violent Extremism as the prime counterterrorism mechanism for the United States. Most people would notice that there's a word missing from that countering violent extremism, and that word is the ideology that motivates it. It's Islamist, or it's Sharia-based, or it's the jihad, stupid. Any of those would be acceptable. Right now, it seems that some of the folks who have taken off the blinders or never had them on in the first place in Congress are doing the right thing and are renaming this program, calling it Islamist terror, as it well should be, and attempting to stop the president from whitewashing the actual enemy and focusing on the folks who are doing us harm. So I think those are very encouraging signs. We would love to see that happen before Congress goes home for the summer, and see our counterterrorism policies actually aimed at the people who are aiming their weapons at us. So bravo to those who are spearheading that.
From your lips to God's ears, we look forward to following this, hopefully, to a happy conclusion in both the House and Senate. Jim, thank you for the great work you do these days. Thank you for your past service to our country in uniform. And we'll look forward to talking with you again next week. We'll look forward to talking with Ambassador Yoram Edinger of Israel about what's happening with the so-called peace process and what it might mean for you right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family, that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260. The Answer.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The International Arbitration Tribunal of the Law of the Sea Treaty has just ruled that one of LOST's member states, Communist China, has violated the rights of another, the Philippines. Beijing was found to have no valid claim to the South China Sea, despite its manufacturing and arming of islands throughout the region. The Chinese have imperiously rejected the ruling and are now in a position forcibly to resist any effort to enforce it. As I and other critics of the Law of the Sea Treaty have long argued, its restrictions only apply to law-abiding nations. Were the U.S. to join, it would impose real burdens on us, but it cannot on countries like China that routinely breach their treaty obligations. The stage is being inexorably set for conflict in the Western Pacific. China is preparing for it, and so must we. This is Frank Affney.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. According to the New York Times, President Obama said during a rare visit to the CIA to discuss the second phase in the battle against ISIS on April 13th, that the U.S.-led coalition had momentum against ISIS and that ISIS fighters realize their cause is lost. But the previous day, the New York Times ran a story with the headline, ISIS expands reach despite military and financial setbacks, noting that although ISIS has suffered losses on the ground in Iraq and Syria, it has expanded its presence in northern Africa, Afghanistan, and Europe. There also has been little progress in stopping ISIS's efforts to recruit homegrown terrorists worldwide. The president is in denial about the threat from ISIS. His trip to the CIA, which should have occurred 5 years ago when the violence broke out in the Middle East, was little more than a publicity stunt. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Ambassador Yoram Ettinger, a man I've come to regard as one of the great thinkers about and practitioners of U.S.-Israeli diplomatic relations, particularly from his perspective as a representative of the government of Israel for many years inside the United States. He has been a commentator about it since he retired with the rank of ambassador from the Israeli Foreign Service. These days he writes the Ettinger Report, a second thought initiative about U.S.-Israeli relations. We're always delighted to catch up with him in Israel. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you from Jerusalem.
Let's talk a little bit about the perspective from Jerusalem, if we can, on this American presidential election and the importance of the choice of president to the U.S.-Israeli partnership, and I think of it as a really strategic alliance.
As important as is the U.S. president, and there's no doubt very important who is the American president, one needs to realize that an American president is not an omnipotent dictator who sets the agenda on his own. And in fact, U.S.-Israel relations have been shaped mostly not by American presidents, but mostly by the representatives of the American people in the House and in the Senate. We have seen all American presidents, from Truman all the way to Obama, pressuring Israel, sometimes also through military embargo, suspension of supply of military systems, denial of economic benefits, denial of loan guarantees to absorb Soviet Jewry in Israel. However, throughout that systematic presidential pressure, the geostrategic cooperation has surged beyond imagination. And it has surged partly because of American presidents, but in my mind, mostly because of the sentiments expressed by the American people, by the way, all the way back to the arrival of the Mayflower and the Arabella in the 17th century, and therefore the position expressed by the representatives of the American people in the House and in the Senate.
I missed that reference to the Mayflower. There was, of course, no modern state of Israel at the time, but there was certainly an attachment to the Judeo-Christian traditions exhibited by the
well, in fact, those
countries.
who arrived on the Mayflower, they made it very clear that they left modern-day Egypt. They were crossing the modern-day Red Sea. And target destination was modern-day Promised Land, modern-day Canaan.
Mr. Ambassador, knowing that both this is an internal domestic political matter, but also that you're at some remove, I just wonder whether you've been following the controversies within the Democratic platform writing process arising from the sentiments of Bernie Sanders and the presence on the platform committee for the Democrats of some of his friends and Israel's foes, shall we say, and the upshot of their efforts.
Well, certainly there has been a difference between the position by most Republicans on one hand, then most Democrats on the other hand. Republicans have tended recently to be more hawkish on Israel and Democrats less hawkish. However, as an Israeli, I'm much less concerned how will the next American president feel about united Jerusalem or the right of Jews to settle in the throughout the land of Israel, the so-called occupation and the Palestinian issue. I'm much more concerned about the next president's attitude towards the defense budget of the U.S. The U.S. and the American allies should be very, very concerned because in recent years, the U.S. defense budget has been eroded dramatically. And as a result, the American posture of deterrence has been eroded. And the American military power projection has been diminishing to the advantage of the foes of America and disadvantage of America's allies. That is much more of concern than how will the next president feel about Jerusalem or the Palestinian issue. Will the next American president consider the UN a major playmaker of international relations as does Obama? Or will the future American president resurrect the independence of America's unilateral action, which is required in an increasingly unstable, fragmented globe? And last and not least, will the next American president recognize Islamic terrorism for what it is, Islamic terrorism, and not workplace violence or hate crime? The bottom line, America's national security is the best guarantee for America's allies, including Israel, and the more hawkish will the next American president be on America's national security, the safer will be Israel and other allies of America.
Yeah, amen, and very well said. Our guest is Ambassador Yoram Ettinger, formerly the counselor of the State of Israel's mission in the United States. You have been very, very focused for a long time, Yoram, on one of the particularly dangerous elements of that Islamist enterprise worldwide, namely the so-called Islamic Republic of Iran. As you look at things today, a year after the well, you can't say the signing of this deal, but the completion of the negotiations of this deal with Iran. How do things look from Israel as it relates to both your security and ours arising from threats emanating from Iran?
Well, no one should be surprised at the state of that so-called agreement, because that agreement was signed between the U.S., Western democracy, and other Western democracies on one hand, and a systematic violator of agreement and a capital of hate education, namely Iran. Why should anyone expect such an entity to comply with agreements? And certainly Iran has not complied with agreements. One needs to look at the state of Saudi domestic security, homeland security, the homeland security of every single Arab ally of the U.S. in the Persian Gulf, and that the Iranian threat is intensifying rather than diminishing. The most fundamental egregious error by the Obama administration when it comes to Iran has been a lack of linkage between the benefits to Iran and the alteration of Iran's attitude, namely rollback of sanctions should have been preconditioned upon rollback of hate education, rollback of subversion, rollback of terrorism, and certainly rollback of ballistic and other capabilities. That linkage is absent, and therefore one cannot expect but continued violations by Iran.
This is the subject of a brand new book by my colleague at the Center for Security Policy, Fred Flights, entitled Obama Bomb. And I commend it to all of you. You'll be able to get it, I think, at the website of the Center for Security Policy, securefreedom.org, for free as a downloadable PDF tomorrow. In the meantime, Mr. Ambassador, thank you for the work that you do on behalf of both your country and the United States, and for that matter, the rest of the free world. Check it out at the Edinger Report. Keep it up, my friend. Come back to us again, if you would, very soon. In the meantime, stay very well. Next up, we'll be speaking with Peter Pham about developments in Africa and what that might mean for us. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hello, I'm Ace Lyons. As a retired 4-star admiral who served as Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet, is a special privilege for me to talk to you about an important new book just released by the Center for Security Policy, China Prepares for Conflict, and Why We Must Do the Same. The book explains that while the Obama administration has dithered over the deterioration of the Middle East and ignored Asia, China has been moving to challenge and displace the dominant role the United States has played in this region and the world since the end of World War II. I am one of 9 co-authors of this important book. The others are former Senator Jim Talent, Gordon Chang, Peter Navarro, Kevin Freeman, Bill Gertz, Frank Gaffney, Fred Flights, and Dean Chang. I explained in my chapter how China's efforts over the last 20 years to seize control of almost the entire South China Sea is an indication of new assertiveness to advance its regional dominance at the expense of the United States. I take issue with President Obama's benign neglect of the threat from China and how Beijing is building islands in the South China Sea that it plans to turn into stationary aircraft carriers to threaten freedom of navigation in this region. Like the other authors of this book, I believe the next president must act immediately to restore American leadership and its military power, both of which have been seriously undermined by the disastrous policies of President Obama. We urgently need to modernize and increase the size of our land, naval, and air forces to stand up to China and other adversaries worldwide. We also need to recognize and counter the growing cyber and intelligence threats from China. The bottom line is that our nation needs to act now. I strongly commend this important book, China Prepares for Conflict and Why We Must Do the Same. You can read it for free as an ebook on the Center's website, securefreedom.org, or you can purchase a copy on Amazon.com.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Dr. Peter Pham. He is one of our duty experts on Africa. He is the director of the Atlantic Council's Africa Center and has been one of the country's preeminent authorities on the continent for many years, serving as an advisor to all kinds of folks, including U.S. Africa Command. He is the author, among others, of Somalia, Fixing Africa's Most Failed State. Peter, I'm not sure that distinction, dubious though it may be, is still Somalia's, but let's talk a little bit about what's happening on the continent. Welcome back. Good to have you back.
Frank, it's always a pleasure to speak with you.
My contender for that, as I say, dubious distinction at the moment is South Sudan, Peter. Tell us what's happening there now and what its prospects are going forward.
Well, ironically, this past weekend, South Sudan would have celebrated the 5th anniversary of its independence, but there was no celebration One, because they couldn't afford a celebration. They've become so destitute, but more pressingly, because last week, unfortunately, fighting broke out again between rival forces, some loyal to the president, Salva Kiir, some to the vice president, Riek Machar, and we're facing hundreds of people killed in the last 5-6 days since things started late last week. And there's the risk, although there seems to be a bit of a calm today, there's a risk that the civil war, which broke out in December 2013, is about to be reignited again.
For those of us who aren't following this terribly closely, Peter, a couple of things that you've just said are sort of mind-numbing. This is a country that, the last time I checked, had extensive oil reserves. Certainly we've seen in Venezuela, it's possible to be both awash with oil and destitute. But what is going on with respect to southern Sudan's penury? And if you would, just explicate a little bit, what are the dividing lines between these rivals in what may seem to be an incipient renewal of the civil war?
Well, with respect to oil, South Sudan actually, in the split between Sudan and what is now South Sudan, made off with the bulk of the oil reserves that the once united country had. So potentially it could have been a very rich country, because there are only about 10 million people in the country and they have fairly significant oil reserves. Unfortunately, because of the fighting the last 2.5-3 years, virtually oil production has ceased, because the skilled engineers and other people who would have operated the oil fields have all been evacuated for their own safety, especially after a number of them were killed. So the government, which was reliant upon the oil reserves for some 90% of its revenue, all of a sudden had no money coming in. Now, not that they spent the money that when it was coming in before the fighting especially well. In fact, by the government's own accounting, somewhere between $2 to $4 billion of that money was simply stolen outright by officials in the government.
And with respect to the dividing lines between the various rivals for power, is it anything other than just a fight over who will control the country?
Well, there are ethnic divides, although one has to say always with an asterisk, because there are people of one ethnic group who support factions of a different ethnic. So there's a bit of a mix in it. But roughly speaking, the Dinka, who are the largest ethnic group, rally around the president, Salva Kiir. The Nuer, who are the second largest group in the country, tend to rally around Riek Machar, the vice president who was dismissed back in 2013 and then has been reinstated as vice president as part of the peace accord. And in fact, the fighting broke out this past week between soldiers loyal to both sides who were closely confined together in Juba, the capital. And they were supposed to be setting up joint patrols and confidence building, but as we see, it didn't get very far.
It must make cabinet meetings a little tricky to have these guys at each other's throats.
Well, yes, especially since just literally the other day, one general on the president's side used an attack helicopter to level the vice president's house.
Wow. This is
so personal. These guys play for keeps.
Yeah, no kidding. Dr. Peter Pham is our guest from the Atlantic Council. Peter, you wrote recently about how Africa might be looking at the Brexit, the so-called end of Britain's involvement in the European Union, and that it might not be all bad news for the African continent. Give us a flavor of why that's so.
Well, let me first say that in the short term, there's going to be some dislocation, and especially countries that are dependent upon the export of primary commodities and natural resources, that a downturn in the British economy or the broader European Union economy will certainly affect their exports and thus their bottom line. But in the long term, Britain has long been engaged in Africa, not only from the days of the empire, but its involvement with the Commonwealth countries. And so a Britain that's looking for markets will, one, perhaps pay more attention to its former colonies, to the Commonwealth, and to Africa as a whole, and therefore be more amenable to trade agreements and other outreach to African countries. And quite frankly, some of the English, especially English-speaking countries in Africa, would probably get a better deal in terms of foreign assistance as well as assistance on security matters, dealing directly with London than they have going through the bureaucracy in Brussels. So it's a mixed bag. Some countries are going to fare worse, but I think other countries may actually see their situation improve dealing with a Britain separated from the European Union.
Well, we'll be watching this closely, especially with evidently the coming to power of Theresa May as the new Prime Minister of Britain on a more accelerated time schedule than had previously been expected. And I'm sure that this will be one of the things that she'll be turning to, is trying to stabilize relations between Britain and its various trading and other partners. Peter Pham, let me ask you about two other very important problems in Africa these days. Boko Haram, for one, and Al-Shabaab, for another. You've been kind to give us sort of progress reports on how the countries in the region are dealing with these respective jihadist threats. What's the latest?
Well, there's some good news in the fight against Boko Haram, insofar as Nigeria and its neighbors have managed to largely push Boko Haram out of any territorial control. So there aren't any regions governed, in quotation marks, by Boko Haram. That's the good news. The bad news is these countries don't have the sufficient force and ability to actually secure the territory they pushed Boko Haram out of. So Boko Haram is still engaging in numerous, almost daily, suicide bombings and other attacks, which essentially render the territory not controlled by them, but nonetheless very dangerous. So people are not returning to their communities, their homes. They're staying much closer to protection in large urban centers. Now, this has caused severe displacement. We estimate about 3 million people are displaced. But more importantly, this means that markets have been disrupted. People are not planting. And so you have a wide swath of Nigeria, Niger, Chad, and Cameroon that in the coming months are going to face a severe food crisis, if not a famine, simply because it's not safe to be out there tilling the land. So I think we're about to go from a situation of Boko Haram as an affiliate of the Islamic State and as a territorial dominion into Boko Haram, the terrorist group, just causing a great deal of humanitarian suffering.
You're following it closely, Peter Pham, at the Atlantic Council. Thank you so much for joining us from time to time to update us on these issues. We look forward to doing so again with you in the near future. We look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.